Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 4th. Burns sets retirement date from chamber. Evan Thomas expected to become next CEO. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Chamber of Commerce announced its president and CEO, Bobby Burns, will retire in August 2024. The chamber also announced that Evan Thomas will join the Midland Chamber of Commerce as chief operating officer beginning July 2023, with the intent to assume the president and CEO role pending a final board review and vote in 2024. Burns, a former mayor of Midland, joined the chamber in March 2011. Quote, "Leading a chamber of commerce was a long-held dream of mine, and it's been an honor to make that dream a reality in a community such as Midland," Burns said in a news release. Under Burns' leadership, the chamber has implemented new initiatives and programs while improving upon traditional offerings. Midland Chamber officials said the adoption of a transition plan will allow the organization to continue to function as the voice of business on the community. Thomas has spent his career in public service and is currently Deputy Chief of Staff for U.S. Representative August Pfluger. Quote, "Evan will bring a plethora of strengths to the table as Chief Operating Officer," Burns said. "His ability to lead a team, connect with decision makers, and think strategically will serve him and the chamber well. We are excited to have him on board to strengthen our advocacy efforts as well. As part of the transition plan, I'm excited to have this time to team up with Evan with the goal of a smooth transition to the position of president and CEO during the chamber's 100th year of operation," end quote. Pfluger described Thomas as an outstanding public servant. Quote, "He's an incredible leader in the Midland community who will succeed in this role as he continues his public service," the San Angelo Republican said in a statement. "My team and I will miss him, but we look forward to working together for the benefit of Midland and beyond," end quote. Thomas and his family have established strong roots in the community, according to the news release. Quote, "I'm excited to join Bobby and this incredible chamber team as we begin our second century of operation," Thomas said in the release. "We have a successful history of founding programs and organizations that have greatly enhanced our community, and I believe our future is even brighter." Finalist, Anglin to rely on leadership experience. Current Cisco College president labeled his management style as collaborative. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Thad Anglin, president of Cisco College since 2016, was the last finalist to participate in Midland College's presidential forum on Wednesday. Anglin is the only finalist with experience as a community college president. He labeled his management style as collaborative and said shared governance is a part of his current college's policies when it comes to leadership and decision-making. Anglin said it's wise to look to the expertise and talent of Midland College's faculty, staff, and administration when it comes to gathering information to make important decisions. He added the administration needs to have a focus on increasing enrollment and putting students in a position to be successful. The candidate said he's a positive person who has spent 30 years in higher education at both four-year colleges and community colleges. He told those at one of two forums on Wednesday that he falls back on his wealth of experience when faced with challenges. Quote, "There's not a lot I haven't seen," Englund remarked. Cisco College and Midland College share a couple similarities, he said, but there are significant differences between the two institutions. Bob Holden, who led the Presidential Search Committee and moderated the forums, said the tax base at Cisco College is around $700 million and brings in $1.2 million. The tax base at Midland College is around $45 billion and takes in around $34 million per year. Given his experience at different institutions throughout his career, Englund wasn't fazed by the monetary differences between the two colleges. He stated he was an administrator at Lone Star College for part of his career, where he managed a large, complex budget, he said. Englund also said he's been able to lead Cisco College, putting it in a positive financial position and improving graduation rates at an institution that doesn't have as many resources as Midland College does. Englund discussed positive aspects of Midland College he can continue to build on if he were to take office. He said he's noticed the positivity on campus and good attitude from those he's met during his visit. He plans to continue to build on it during his time. Englund illustrated the importance of career and technical training as it concerns community colleges. He said a story that the approximately 50 community colleges statewide could tell more often is how they're responsible for training the next generation of the American workforce that is going to continue to move the Texas economy forward. He said if he becomes Midland College's next president, he will meet with local industry leaders to gather information about the kind of employee they're looking for. In conclusion, Englund was asked where he sees Midland College in 5 years. He said even before that, he will most likely conduct a salary study to investigate the college's salary structure and faculty pay. He plans that the school will see an improvement in enrollment and student success. Pioneers Sheffield is ready for retirement. Outgoing Pioneer Natural Resources CEO feels his successor is ready to take the reins at Pioneer. The story was written by Mella McEwen. When Scott Sheffield agreed in 2019 to return to his post as Chief Executive Officer of Pioneer Natural Resources, it would be for 3 years. Quote, "Then COVID happened, and the board decided to consolidate, acquiring Parsley Energy and Double Point Energy, and it ended up being almost 5 years," he told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Nearing 71 years, he told the board it was time to focus on the succession plan, which will see Rich Dealey, current president and chief operating officer, take on the role of CEO when Sheffield retires again at the end of the year. Quote, "Rich is ready this year," Sheffield said, noting that the 7 months before his actual retirement is the same length of time as in 2016 when Tim Dove was chosen to succeed him. Quote, "Rich is ready," he repeated. "I've accomplished all I set out to accomplish, making Pioneer a leader in the Permian Basin, reducing flaring, reducing methane and CO2 emissions, changing the capital framework, and increasing efficiencies," end quote. For his part, Daly told the Reporter-Telegram his new position will offer great opportunities and great challenges. Quote, "I plan to continue what we've been doing, which is focus on strategy," Daly said. "I think we have great strategy moving forward," end quote. "Execution will be a focus," he said, citing Pioneer's development of wells with lateral lengths in excess of 15,000 feet that provide significant capital savings on a per-foot basis and generate returns that are on average 20% higher than a 10,000-foot lateral well. Pioneer expects to put more than 100 wells with 15,000-foot laterals on production this year. Pioneer will also continue its focus on reducing emissions, expecting 100% of its completions fleets to be either electric, the company is constructing highlines to power operations, or dual fuel powered by the second half of the year. A partnership with NextEra Energy Resources is developing a 140-megawatt wind generation facility on Pioneer acreage on the Hutt Ranch in southeastern Midland County. Dealey will also oversee Pioneer's expansion of its focus beyond the Spraberry trend to the Barnett Shale, budgeting between $150 million and $200 million, principally for drilling four Barnett-Woodford Formation wells in the Midland Basin and additional testing of the company's enhanced oil recovery project. Quote, "We're taking what we have, a million-acre footprint, and expanding. There are EOR opportunities for us, opportunities for longer-term carbon capture. We're only producing 6 to 8% of our resources. Getting 50% more would be terrific for the basin," he said. Sheffield was born into the industry, the son of an ARCO executive. In 1979, he was the fifth employee of Pioneer's predecessor, Parker and Parsley Petroleum, rising to CEO 6 years later and chairman in 1991. Looking over that career, Sheffield said he is proud of making the Permian Basin the world's largest producing basin. Quote, "It wasn't just me, it was 2,000-plus great employees," he said. The toughest part of his career came after Parker and Parsley merged with Mesa Incorporated in 1997 to form Pioneer. That was just before commodity prices collapsed to $10 a barrel, prompting the company to go through significant restructuring. For his part, Dealey said the company's more than 2,000 employees working to add energy supplies the world needs offers an exciting opportunity. He said he is proud of them and what they do to provide needed energy. The challenge, as for every company in the industry, will be navigate commodity prices, which he noted Pioneer cannot control. Quote, "The other challenge is volatility in the world," Dealey said. "Plus, we don't know what future challenges will look like," end quote. What Pioneer can do, he said, is focus on execution and becoming more efficient and more productive and build a strong balance sheet to help weather any economic downturns. Hillcrest Barbecue Team earns another trip to state cook-off. Midland School shows it can compete with state's big boys. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. For the Hillcrest School, the high school barbecue circuit has been more than an extracurricular activity. It has been a chance to compete with the big boys inside Midland County, across West Texas, and around the state. However, heading into its second straight High School Barbecue Incorporated State Championship, Hillcrest's Eagle Q team can rightfully claim its status as a big boy and, more importantly, a state qualifier. This weekend, Hillcrest joins Midland High and Greenwood as county schools that have qualified teams for the 102-team state competition. Only one, however, is a returnee, and that is Hillcrest, which finished 13th last year. Quote, "That gives them a chance to compete on the same level as every other school," Coach David Tilley said. "They will even compete against my old high school, Kerrville Tyvee. They are UIL Classification 6A. Other teams from Midland County set to participate in the state championship cook-off to be held at Dell Diamond Field in Round Rock, are Midland High teams Ring of Fire and Up in Smoke, and Greenwood's Smokin' Rangers and Sizzlin' Rangers. A barbecue team from Legacy High School will compete in the Texas High School Barbecue Association qualifier in Burnet. Other high schools around the region set to compete at one event or the other include Big Spring High School, Grady High School, and Rankin High School. Rankin's Hot and Ready team was the only area team with a higher place than Hillcrest in 2022. They finished 11th. Hillcrest captured its berth in the state competition, claiming the reserve championship at a regional cook-off, coincidentally won by the Greenwood Smokin' Rangers in Reagan County. That put the 2023 HS BBQ Incorporated State Championship on the Hillcrest calendar, not that the school's first-year coach needs a reminder. Quote, "They never stopped talking about," Telly said of his team. "For the past 2 weeks, they come by the office and ask, are you ready for state?" End quote. The Hillcrest team is made up of Dylan Hampton on ribs, Clayton Jones, beans and ribs, Gavin Martinez, pitmaster and brisket, Jackson Stout, chicken, Cameron Weidig, dessert, Bryant Floyd, chicken, Colton Phillips, ribs, and Austin Rosser, brisket and beans. The high school competition involves making 5 dishes, brisket, ribs, chicken, beans, and desserts. The points added up from all 5 events make a team score, and the team with the best team score is selected as grand champion or first place. The students cook the food, as coaches and parents can't be within the perimeter of the cooking area. Hillcrest's venture into cook-offs started in 2019-2020 when parent Steve Forquin assembled a team. That year, Hillcrest defeated the defending HSBBQ Incorporated State Champion to win a competition. What has been donated for Eagle Q is a trailer to help transport Hillcrest's 3 drum smokers. Each drum is dedicated to a certain meat. Quote, "When they started, I think they started realizing they were good," Tilly said, "and they cared more and more about doing well." End quote. When the students get to each competition, they are provided their meats. The meat at state will be provided by the Nolan Ryan Beef Company, Tilly said. The students then are in control. They wake up at 4 a.m. to get to the competition at 4:30. The cooking is wood-based, and that requires those participating to pay attention to temperature and other weather conditions. Make a mistake with the wood, and that will change how the meat is smoked, Tilly said. One other thing, Hillcrest's Eagle Q team has no seniors, so the lone school in the county that is making its second straight appearance in the HSBBQ Incorporated State Championship will have the team coming back next year. Hillcrest School is a private, not-for-profit, Cognia-accredited school for students with learning differences in grades K through 12. They specialize in helping students with dyslexia and attention deficit hyperactivity.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, May 4th. Judge takes issue with city attorney's remarks. Back in January, the city council met in chambers to discuss advertising Odessa Municipal Court presiding judge Carlos Rodriguez's job, but tabled taking action. On April 26th, newly appointed city attorney Dan Jones told the council Rodriguez ignored a Texas Supreme Court official's directives regarding a court security committee. according to internal emails obtained Monday by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, the judge is disputing Jones's portrayal of the events. During the 85th legislative session, the Texas legislature passed the Judge Julie Kokurik Judicial and Courthouse Security Act of 2017. As a result, municipal judges were ordered to establish court security committees. In addition, a court security division was created at the Texas Supreme Court's Office of Court Administration to help courts conduct and review security and emergency preparedness. On April 25th, Jones reported, Rodriguez told interim city manager Agapito Bernal that the OCA's security director, Hector Gomez, told him he could not provide him or the city council any of the security committee's agendas or meeting minutes. Jones further said he was concerned Rodriguez had not appointed Bernal or city council members to the security committee, even though it's the council's responsibility to fund security measures at the courthouse. He said he reached out to Gomez and Gomez had a frank discussion with him. The point of it is that Judge Rodriguez has not included any of you sitting there on this, which he needs to. He was told to by Mr. Gomez, a former U.S. Marshal. He handles all of this for the state of Texas, Jones said. The council responded by unanimously appointing Bernal and city council member Greg Connell to the committee, which includes court director Kimberly Joswiak, assistant city prosecutor James Kevin McKeithen, Judge Keith Kidd, and Odessa Police Corporal Jason Ball. In an email sent by Gomez to Jones on April 20th, he said he advised Rodriguez he could provide the agenda and minutes to the city council and management. He also said it is his recommendation city management and a member of the city council be a part of the security committee. However, he did not indicate if he'd mentioned that to Rodriguez. The day after the city council meeting, Rodriguez sought to clarify matters in an email to Bernal. Security committee members and council members, Denise Swanner and Mark Mata. Judge's response. In it, the judge said things that had been blown up out of proportion, Rodriguez wrote. He confirmed with Gomez that the meeting minutes and the agendas are judicial records that, under Section 12 of the Rules of Judicial Administration, are exempt from disclosure. However, he said he was waiting for Gomez to check with his general counsel to see if they could be released to Bernal and council members, and if so, how to do it without them being vulnerable to release to the general public. As of April 26, Rodriguez said he hadn't heard from Gomez, and he suspected it was because Gomez had spoken with Jones and may have felt the issue had been resolved. Mr. Gomez and I did not have any conversations about who should serve on the committee other than recommendations that I involve law enforcement, as our conversation was focused on the release of judicial records, Rodriguez wrote. Mr. Gomez did not give me the recommendation that he gave Mr. Jones, that a member of council and city management should serve on the committee. If Gomez had given him the recommendation, Rodriguez said he would have followed it, as he is the expert in this topic. The judge even pointed out that Gomez didn't say in his email to Jones that he'd made the recommendation to him. The judge said Jones made the same recommendation during an earlier meeting, but he had wanted to look into the law and any potential conflict before committing to do so. But again, I would have followed Mr. Gomez's recommendation. Rodriguez said it was portrayed as though he was intentionally dismissing Gomez's recommendations, but he was not. I have not been attempting to exclude you or counsel, just wanting to be sure I am in compliance with the law and statutes before making any decisions, Rodriguez said. With that said, I am glad Mr. Gomez gave a solution that will work for everyone. I look forward to welcoming you and Councilman Connell to the committee and will email you when we set up our next meeting. Gomez did not immediately respond to emails seeking clarification on the matter. Earlier troubles. During the January 24th meeting, a handful of Odessa attorneys stood before the city council and strenuously objected to replacing Rodriguez on the bench. Attorney Gavin Norris speculated Rodriguez was on the chopping block because he may have gotten into a dispute with Mayor Javier Hoven after Hoven sent a letter to him and Kidd about Operation Graduation. In the letter, Hoven wrote, I request that you consider the maximum penalty for any social host violations and for any minor in possession citations. Norris described the letter as being inappropriate, but Hoven insisted he wasn't trying to intimidate the judges. Norris and attorney Anthony Robles also wondered if someone was upset that steps had been taken to restrict access to juvenile records. Robles went so far as to poll each of the council members as to whether they were accessing juvenile records. All denied doing so, including Swanner, who at the time was working for Teen Court as an assistant coordinator. Following the meeting, Teen Court coordinator Rebecca Grisham said Swanner had occasionally accessed the files up until 3 years prior, when a new policy was implemented prohibiting Swanner, herself, and other city employees from accessing them. Rodriguez and Joswiak both joined the court 3 years ago. Swanner was fired from her position in March. In an email to her board, Grisham said she still fully supported Swanner, but there were some issues and conflicts regarding Teen Court and her position on city council that we never could have foreseen when she decided to run a few years ago. Landgraf Craddock legislation passes the House. Legislation filed by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, to establish the Texas Severance Tax Revenue and Oil and Natural Gas Strong Defense Fund to address critical needs in major energy-producing areas of Texas, including the Permian Basin, passed out of the Texas House of Representatives on Monday with nearly unanimous approval. Texas Strong is about doing what is necessary so that Texas can be a global force for good, Landgraf said. It's about defending the Texas energy industry, upstream, downstream, and everything, and everyone in between, because of how important it all is to our state budget and economy, as well as geopolitics and American freedom. My Texas Strong plan will keep more of the state taxes generated in the oil patch invested in the schools, colleges, healthcare institutions, and first responders that serve our underserved energy-producing communities. House Joint Resolution 111 and House Bill 2207 would amend the Texas Constitution and state law to create the Texas Severance Tax Revenue and Oil and Natural Gas Strong Defense Fund. According to the provisions of the legislation, the Texas Strong Defense Fund would receive a portion of severance tax revenue for the purpose of supporting transportation infrastructure, workforce and economic development, public education, health care, and public safety needs in regions of the state with the highest oil and gas production. If successful, the measures would result in hundreds of millions of dollars being available for energy-producing communities as early as next year. Landgraf's legislation also dedicates portions of the severance taxes collected by the state to be used for property tax relief across Texas, and accounts used to clean up Texas air and groundwater contamination. I filed House Joint Resolution 111 and House Bill 2207 because I believe that's what's best for the Permian Basin, is what's best for the Lone Star State, Landgraf continued. It's impossible to articulate how proud I am to serve our region in the Texas House. That is why I am going to continue fighting tooth and nail to pass Texas strong. HJR 111 and HB 2207 now head to the Texas Senate, where they must pass out of a Senate committee before they are considered by the full Senate. HJR 111 must receive support from two-thirds of the Senate to pass, along with a majority of Texas voters in the November 2023 Constitutional Amendment election. HB 2207 must obtain a simple majority vote in the upper chamber, the governor's signature, a voter approval of HJR 111 in order to pass into law. Landgraf and the other members of the Texas legislature convened at the Texas Capitol Building for the 88th Texas Legislative Session on January 10, 2023. Members of the Texas House and Texas Senate meet for a 140-day regular session beginning the second Tuesday in January every odd-numbered year to vote on legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Also, State Representative Tom Craddock, Republican Midland, filed a joint resolution in the Texas House of Representatives to bring state money generated by oil and gas production back to the Permian Basin and other energy-producing hotbeds. These funds would be returned to where they originated to make improvements to expand roads and invest in infrastructure needed in the energy-producing areas. This legislation was overwhelmingly approved by the House Monday with over 120 votes. This legislation is the answer to the needs of the oil and gas producing areas of the state. These communities are the economic generators for Texas and the United States. We owe these communities an investment into their roads, infrastructure, health care, schools, and so much more, said Craddock. HJR 27 would create the Generate Recurring Oil Wealth Grow for Texas Fund. The fund does not create or raise taxes. Rather, it secures the existing state revenue paid by oil and gas severance taxes for specific reinvestment in the Texas oil patch. The money could be used for roads, education, broadband, law enforcement, and many other of the required needs in these energy communities. GROW has broad support from a variety of companies, trade associations, and individuals. Some of these supporters include Apache, CenterPoint Energy, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Diamondback Energy, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, Motren, Occidental Petroleum, Pioneer, Panhandle Producers and Royalty Owner Association, PPROA, Texas Alliance for Energy Producers, Texas Association of Business, Texas Pipeline Association, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owner Association, TIPRO, and Texas Oil and Gas Association, TXOGA. Previously, the GROW Texas legislation has been passed out of the Texas House twice with over 120 votes in support of the measure. Quick hits, bulky item drop-off. Need to get rid of that old couch or some bulky items? A free bulky item drop-off is scheduled 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. May 12th at 2644 Sycamore Drive in West Odessa. Don't bring tires or refrigerators, condensers, freezers, unless Freon has been removed. Regular loose trash, pallets, batteries, chemicals, or paint. Contractors may not participate. The event is sponsored by Acres West Funeral Home, and the drop-off is on their lot. Loads will be inspected at the gate to ensure they can be accepted. Wildcatter Trail. The Permian Basin Wildcatters Trail will be the topic of a meeting 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center in Midland about the proposed Permian Basin Wildcatter Trail. The trail will link Odessa and Midland with a biking, hiking, and multi-use trail that is proposed starting near Midland Rockhound Stadium and winding to near the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center and then on near the University of Texas Permian Basin. Odessa Shred Event. The Better Business Bureau of the Permian Basin has scheduled an Odessa Shred event from 8 a.m. to noon, May 6th, at the Odessa Recycling Center, 816 West 42nd Street. Bring up to 5 boxes of paper documents to be disposed of securely. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/3nfjshk6. Absolute Dance. Absolute Dance will present Life is a Highway at 7 p.m. May 11th and 12th and at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 6 p.m. May 13th. Tickets are $13. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/3SCZWBYC. Women of Distinction. Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest will be honoring local women of distinction May 6th. The honorees are Ellen Board of Midland ISD, Kathy Harrison and Becky McCraney of Miss Casey's Wonderland, Andrea Quiroz of Odessa Lynx, and Dr. Sandra Woodley of the University of Texas Permian Basin. The event will be held at 6 p.m. May 6th. The proceeds from this event will help fund Girl Scout programming, including the Girl Scout Leadership Experience, enhance their four pillars, outdoors, STEM, life skills, and entrepreneurship, and support various Girl Scout activities and programs throughout the council. Museum of the Southwest to host annual Kentucky Derby viewing party. Anyone who follows horse racing knows that two Kentucky Derby winners have come from the Permian Basin. And any horse racing fanatic can tell you that two of those trophies are at the Museum of the Southwest. In 1959, Fred Turner Jr.'s horse, To My Lee, won the Kentucky Derby. Then 28 years later, Pamela and Dorothy Scarborough's horse, Ali Sheba, won the Running of the Roses. Each year, the Museum of the Southwest likes to celebrate the Kentucky Derby with a watch party, and that tradition will continue this weekend. The Museum of the Southwest will be hosting a garden party at May 6th beginning at 4 p.m. The event will include a garden party with mint juleps, derby hat and bow tie contest, and live bluegrass music from the band Steel Grassy. It's a great time. Senior Director of Development and Communications at Museum of the Southwest, Mary Catherine Marshall, said, "We have a fun bluegrass band that will be playing. We have food that you would find if you were at the Kentucky Derby. We're excited to reveal in that moment. Of course, we'll be watching the race live on TV. We'll be playing some outside fun games. We'll have a hat and bow tie contest to those who come well-dressed. Tickets are $75 for museum members and $100 for non-members and can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/2P8DU252. We're excited to celebrate the 149th running of the Kentucky Derby here in Midland," Marshall said. The Turner Museum is home to two Kentucky Derby winning horses, To My Lee in 1959 and Ali Sheba in 1987. They have ties to Midland and the Turner family and Scarborough family. Each year, when they have the running of the roses, we like to celebrate that part of history and the sport. We hope that everyone will come out and join us. The event has been held each year since 2016. Really, it's an opportunity to get together and celebrate an exciting part of history, Marshall said. It's also a fundraiser for the museum. We have the largest collection of Kentucky Derby memorabilia outside of Churchill Downs. The museum contains many other memorabilia and objects from the Kentucky Derby. As an equestrian, personally, it's really quite grand, Marshall said. It's not something that's an everyday occurrence, and they're quite lovely. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for folks to come and see. For more information about the event, go to tinyurl.com/2pkwdx74. Prayer event is Friday in Odessa. Five prayers for our city is scheduled 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday at the MCM Elegante Hotel, 5200 University Boulevard. Doors will open at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 4th is the National Day of Prayer. This event is a free prayer event, and Mayor Javier Hovind and other elected officials are asking for Odessans to attend. Some of the areas indicated that prayer is needed for include abuse and neglect, mental health and suicide, addiction, human trafficking, and public education. Saturday event will have tributes to those lost. When Michelle Watson lost her son to fentanyl in August 2020, she vowed to save other mothers from experiencing her agony. It took her a while to battle through her depression, but Watson is now going full throttle. Watson created the 111 Project in November, gave a school presentation in Big Lake in January, created a website, and stood before the Odessa City Council last month. On Saturday, the project is co-hosting a rally at the Ector County Courthouse from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tributes will be made to those who have lost their lives to fentanyl, and educational materials will be handed out by co-host Association of People Against Lethal Drugs and other organizations like Reach Recovery. On August 5, 2020, Watson said her son, Malachi Mitchell, was a 20-year-old man who was raising his one-year-old son, Julian, with his girlfriend, Noelle, in Midland. Working security and striving to obtain his GED, he'd spent the day with Julian and Noelle, and that night decided to go out with some friends. At 1:30 a.m., Watson said she got a call from Noelle. "She's just screaming, saying, 'You've got to get over here. Malachi is blue and his feet are cold.' And I just remember jumping up out of the bed. I mean, I don't even remember putting on my clothes. I just flew across town," Watson said. "When I ran up the three flights of stairs into his apartment and I saw him lying on the floor, I knew he was gone. I mean, I knew it. He's my son. I'm yelling at him. I'm asking him, 'Please wake up.' But I could tell he was gone. I could feel it in my soul." She would later learn Malachi had asked somebody for Percocet, a pain reliever made of oxycodone and acetaminophen. Unbeknownst to him, it also contained a lethal amount of fentanyl. "We as mothers do not call it an overdose at all because they didn't know what they were getting. None of these kids knew that they were ingesting fentanyl, synthetic fentanyl that is coming from China and Mexico. They all thought they were taking whatever they asked for, you know. My Malachi, for instance, wanted to take a Percocet," Watson said. She knows another mother who lost a daughter when she unknowingly took ibuprofen that was laced with fentanyl. "She'd had a headache at a party and asked for a Tylenol or its equivalent," Watson said. "It is now her mission to educate parents and kids alike that tragedies like hers are happening every 11 seconds in the United States, hence the name of her organization. These kids want to live this YouTube lifestyle, and they think it's all fun and games, and oh, let's go, there's the Lil Wayne song talking about popping Molly. And of course, that's what they all want to do because they hear it on the radio and on TV and everything else. So was Malachi a perfect kid? No, but is any kid perfect? No, Watson said. Since Malachi died, Watson, an insurance agent, said she has met entirely too many parents who have also lost their children to fentanyl. Several have joined her in her efforts to educate the public about fentanyl, which can kill in doses as small as 2 milligrams. She was thrilled when Odessa City Council members invited her to join them when they announced April 25th that the city will receive $600,000 to fight the opioid crisis. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has joined finalized opioid agreements with CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, and the opioid manufacturer Allergan, thus securing the state hundreds of thousands of dollars. During the April 25th meeting, Mayor Javier Hovind said Council Member Denise Swanner suggested the city apply for a portion of the settlements. The city received its first check of more than $175,000 recently, and Police Chief Mike Gerke is working with Swanner and Council Member Mark Mata to determine how the funds should be spent. I would hope that they would donate to local organizations that are actually out here with boots on the ground trying to fight this, because we could definitely use it, Watson said. I mean, me going into schools and presentations, print materials are costly, travel, things like that, it costs, so any little bit helps. Local News Roundup. Trio arrested on solicitation charges. 3 men were arrested recently following an undercover operation designed to track down human traffickers. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety and arrest affidavits, the men separately responded to undercover agents' internet ads and arranged to meet via text message with someone they knew to be 15 or 16 in order to have sex, and then showed up at the predetermined site. Arrest on suspicion of online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison, were Joel Elizondo, 33, of Kingsville, and Luis Rosales, 53, of Monahans, and Nathan Dubose, 27, of Big Spring. DPS worked with the Texas Highway Patrol, Odessa Police Department, and the Midland County Sheriff's Office on the operation, which ran from April 26 to April 29. Woman accused of stabbing sister. A 24-year-old woman was arrested Friday after family members told authorities she stabbed her 29-year-old sister in the face. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a disturbance call around 2:30 p.m. Friday from the 10,000 block of West Chaparral. When deputies arrived, a 47-year-old woman said she and one of her daughters had gone to the home on West Chaparral to check on her younger daughter, Isabel Alexandri Nunez, because she was intoxicated to the point of losing consciousness. According to the report, the woman said when Nunez woke up, she got a knife from the kitchen and stabbed her other daughter in the cheek. A man in the home said the two sisters were in a physical fight when Nunez, his girlfriend, stabbed her sister, according to the report. Obituaries, May 4th. Willie Howard Harris, 76, of Voss, Texas, passed away on Friday, April 27th, at his residence. He was born on Tuesday, December 3rd, 1946, to Jesse and Cleo Cynthia Barnes Harris in Jackson County, Tennessee. Willie married Theresa Gerald on July 27, 2001, in Odessa. He is survived by daughter Shirley Drugan and husband Bob, Sheila Rose and husband Don, Lori Cheekmore and Christy Hester, son James Miller and wife Jessica, Sisters Frances Johnson, Margaret Dockery, Vicki Maynard, Cynthia Ogletree, and Brother Roy Harris. Funeral services will be held for Willie on Thursday, May 4th at 2 p.m. at Lang Funeral Home Chapel in Ballinger, Texas. Mary Elizabeth Baxter, 76, of Odessa, beloved wife and mother, returned to the Lord on Friday, April 28th, after a lengthy battle with cancer. Mary was born August 14, 1946, in Tyler, to Cletus Alton and Jonelle Pippin. She is survived by her husband John and his daughter Cheryl, Mary's sons Greg and Doug Steer, her brothers Larry and Bobby Pippin, and David Fulmer, and several grandchildren and one great-grandson. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 2nd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 3rd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.npwelch.com. Arrangements are entrusted to Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Sandra Deanna Day Phillips, was born on December 13, 1938, in Houston, to Glenn Leonard Day and Wilma Kiker Day. Deanna is survived by her daughter Kelly James Bourne of Wiley, sons Wood Hargis of Pflugerville, Sam Hargis of Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, as well as several grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. Preceded in death by her husband Paul, brothers Glenn and Doug, and parents Glenn and Wilma. A celebration of her life will be May 13th at 2 p.m. at Cross Point Church, 5703 McNeil Road, Austin. In lieu of flowers, the family asks you to make a donation to her church in her name. For more details, in her online obituary at https://www.cremation.green/obit/deanna-day-phillip/. Death notices. Craig Davis Brazell, 68, of Midland, died Friday, April 28th in San Angelo. Memorial service is scheduled for 4 p.m. May 3rd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jose Juan Bustillos, 76, of Odessa, died Wednesday, April 26th in Odessa. No service has been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Josu Manuel Concepcion Roman, 38, of Midland, died Saturday, April 29th in Midland. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. ECISD Hospital election coming up. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees election is coming up Saturday with two contested races. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Two incumbents, Donna Smith, position 3, and Dennis Jones, position 7, are facing challengers. Smith will face Wayne Woodall, and Jones will square off against Reverend Robert Thayer and John Dietz Rabinault. Voting centers can be found at tinyurl.com/2y9r23yp. Jones, 67, graduated from Odessa High School in 1974. She earned a bachelor's from Texas Tech, her master's from the University of Texas, and her PhD from Texas Tech. At Odessa College, she taught English and retired last year after 41 years there. She has been on the school board since 2006. Woodall, 45, is the lead life skills teacher at Midland High School. His father is a former board member, Doyle Woodall, and he has not run for school board before. His father, Doyle Woodall, was forced to resign from the board following a controversy over social media post he made. Woodall is an Odessa High School graduate and went to college at West Texas A&M in Canyon and Sul Ross State University in Alpine, where he earned a Bachelor of Science degree in kinesiology with a minor in history. Woodall also has a Master's of Education degree in sports management from Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene. He is married to Jennifer Woodall, and they have three children, one grandson and another grandson on his way this summer. Jones, 63, was appointed to the Board of Trustees in May 2022 to replace Nelson Minyard, the previous trustee who had retired and moved from the district. The school board held a special meeting June 20th, and trustees interviewed 8 applicants for the spot. Jones has lived and worked in Odessa for 17 years as a prosecutor, judge, and now private practice lawyer. While working as a municipal judge for the city of Odessa, he was actively involved in the truancy program for 13 years. He also has previous teaching experience at Angelina College and Odessa College. Together, he and his wife have 3 children and 5 grandchildren. Thayer is the lead pastor at Odessa Bible Church. He is from Anaheim, California, and moved to Texas in 1994. While he was not born in Texas, he has lived in Texas longer than he lived in California. He attended Whittier Christian High School in La Habra, California. He earned a bachelor's degree in pastoral ministries from Christian Heritage College, now called San Diego Bible College, in El Cajon, California, just outside of San Diego. Thayer attended Dallas Theological Seminary, where he earned a Master's of Theology degree, graduating in 2000. Ravenault said during a candidate forum April 20th that he wants to make sure every student is challenged and encouraged to achieve academic excellence, technical skills, and responsible citizenship. He served ECISD for 34 years in IT. Education is one key to success. I'm a firm believer that lifelong education is an investment in oneself, Ravenault said. As a trustee, I would work to ensure that parents, students, and teachers are fairly represented. I would speak with parents, teachers, and administrators to get a sense of their concerns and priorities. Every child deserves a future, Ravenault said. Don Miller, who will be the new Position 1 trustee, has been declared elected because she didn't face any opposition. Miller is replacing longtime outgoing member Carol Gregg. Also, Odessa College board members Bruce Shear, place 1, Hortensia Del Bosque, place 2, and Dr. Tara Deaver, place 8, faced no opposition. On the Ector County Hospital District Board, incumbent Mary Lou Anderson will face Will Kapoff for the District 2 spot. David Dunn, District 4, and Wollaston, District 6, did not have opposition.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.